Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day, and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny, and there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, October 4th. Welcome to the podcast sponsored by Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, the makers of Leqvio and Clizarin. The Prince of Pickups himself, Andy Behrens, is here to advise us on all on how to approach the waiver wire for this week. Andy, we're running on peak efficiency here. I realize we had to do this podcast like 10 minutes before we had to start. I was like, oh, right, this is scheduled for noon. I better stop. I better run up from the home gym and take a shower real quick. So I'm sweating my ass off. People are sweating their fantasy teams out there. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm good. I was a Duke last week. I'm a Prince this week. I feel like I'm ascending in the royal hierarchy. So that's awesome. It was a good Sunday. Like, I like waking up to a London game and then having like a great primetime game at the bookends on week four, at least on Sunday. So good. That Vikings Saints game. Questionable cast of characters involved in it, but it was a really fun game. And then obviously Kansas City and Tampa was magnificent.
Yeah, really. I mean, one-sidedly magnificent. We'll talk about that game later. But anytime, you know, Mahomes can go out there and put on any quarterback can go out there and put on a show like that. I don't need to hear about like, oh, the score wasn't competitive. Like, that's entertaining. We're here to be entertained, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't like that, I don't know what to tell you. But we will get into all the pickups for this week. We also have a beefy injury-laden news section. But before we get into all that, you've heard us talk about it every week on this show. If you're not already playing Daily Fantasy on Yahoo, now is the time to start. To get started, go to yahoo.com/dailyfantasy and use promo code HARMAN15. Oh man, what a promo code. Or just
you
click
got
the link
a promo code? Oh my God.
That's right, man.
I've been so long they never gave me a promo code.
You're the Prince of Pickups. I've got myself a got myself a promo code, pal. I'll take that over any royal title. You can also just click the link in this episode description, then use the code HARMAN15. That's right, Andy, HARMAN15 on your first deposit of $5 or more, and Yahoo will give you an extra $15. In site credit that comes right out of Andy Behrens' salary, so you'd really love to see that. Again, that's code HARMON15 to get your first deposit bonus. The code is active until October 9th and cannot be combined with other bonuses. Rewards program terms apply. Okay, on to the show.
Andy, I swear if there's a Del Don 15, I'm walking out.
Triple D 15, we'll have to work on that one, man. we love to see it. All right, on to the rest of the show. Like I said, pretty beefy news section here. And you know, some of this will mix into our waiver wire advice so we can, you know, get right into that. First one up, Scott and I talked about it yesterday. We now have clarity that Javonte Williams, oh man, what a bummer. Torn ACL, he's out for the season. Ian Rapoport also added that in addition to having a torn ACL, the MRI revealed a torn LCL and posterior lateral corner. I mean, good Lord. It's a significant injury, and it's a long road back, as Ian Rapoport notes. This sounds kind of strikingly familiar to, like, you know, some of these injuries like J.K. Dobbins, right, where he got injured in preseason and there was more than just an ACL. And we've seen, like, Dobbins now week four is just finally starting to get back, Andy. So huge bummer because I wrote this in my Care Don't Care recap last night. I think Williams has been their most impressive, most consistent, and best offensive player so far in Denver, which, and obviously that sucks when you trade all that money and give a big contract to a quarterback, but they're still clearly trying to figure things out from that side. But Williams looked like the dude in this offense, and now they're going to be without him the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think that is not only true in terms of him being the most impressive offensive player on Denver's roster, but also, like, we were going to get rid of this committee. And I've been, you know, I'm a pretty big fan of Melvin Gordon. I think Melvin Gordon is a very good player. The ball security issues had become significant enough that it sure seemed, at least the way they began week four, like it was just going to be the Javonte Williams show. Right. And so everybody who's been screaming on Twitter for 2 years to feed Javonte was probably going to get it, which means that Javonte was going to be one of the right answers in fantasy. And it's just we're deprived of, you know, the 14 weeks of Javonte Williams' career, which sucks.
Might be more. Again, I'd prepare for maybe a little bit more, you know, going forward.
Yeah, because he's just a fantastic watch. And he's also like he was going to be one of the right answers in our game because he was pretty clearly coming into an even larger workload. And you weren't going to have to, you know, it sure looked like Melvin or Mike Boone or whoever, like they were just going to become sort of rotational guys who stepped in when Javonte needed a breather, because they opened that game with like it was going to be the Javonte show, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Melvin Gordon fumbles in that game. And you know, when he fumbled, I thought to myself, like, every running back out there gets punished for fumbles except Melvin Gordon, it seems. Like, he has managed to have a fumbling problem, especially in his Denver years, but really probably throughout the course of his career, he's had a fumbling problem and was really seemingly never lost, like, you know, a lot of work for it. But then, of course, he fumbles in the second quarter. And then in the second half, after obviously Javonte Williams only plays one snap, gets hurt, 15 snaps for Mike Boone, 8 snaps for Melvin Gordon, 4 touches for Boone, 2 touches for Melvin Gordon. It's also worth noting that Mike Boone had what I might consider a drop late as Denver were trying to come back in that game, but it's not nearly as disappointing as obviously the fumbling problem for Gordon. So you're right, this was probably going to get narrowed down to I'm not 100% sure I buy that, because they were even mixing in Mike Boone in like week 3, which is really not what Javonte Williams needed to see. But regardless, I do think this makes it a little less clear going forward as to who's going to be the guy behind Williams. And it does really suck for Williams, who I agree with you was looking like the right answer. In some ways, not quite in the fashion that we thought, because he was doing a lot of damage on like a per route basis as a receiver, which was bizarre, right? Like, he was the target of many of those Russell Wilson check down missiles that he was throwing to running backs. So that was going to be a big boost for him. But yeah, going forward, I mean, how do you feel like this split works out between Gordon and Boone?
I assume, first of all, since they had a player as talented as Javonte Williams and they were using him in essentially a 50-50 committee, that they're going to stick with a committee, right? Like, if you had a guy that good and you put him in a committee, you're definitely doing it with Melvin and Boone. If people have Melvin Gordon on a roster and they're trying to pat themselves on the back for it and thinking that, okay, now I've got this featured guy, I doubt it. I would imagine it's something like 55-45, 50-50. The coaching staff had clearly run out of patience with Gordon. He was, as you mentioned, not getting like the typical Melvin Gordon workload in week 4 already. The fumbles had just, you know, I feel like his rookie season, he was definitely a fumbler. He's always had a little bit of an issue with it, like in terms of like 4 or 5 a year. But this is like 5 in 4 games, right? I think he's lost 4 of them, one of which completely, you know, if it didn't decide the game against the Raiders, it turned the game against the Raiders for sure. Yeah. So he was clearly losing touches. I think he gets a bailout now. I think he's probably a 50% guy again. He's, you know, when he holds onto the ball, he's good. That's
right.
That's been the problem for the Javon. I don't even know what to call them. The Javonte Williams, like, true believers. And they should have been true
his
believers.
Cohort. He's really good. Williams cohort. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like he was really good, but the problem was Melvin Gordon wasn't very far down the ranks in terms of all the things that you like to cite about Javonte Williams, right? Like, Melvin Gordon has played very well, again, when he holds on to the football. Mike Boone, we can get into in the pickups a little bit. We can talk about him now. He's been we were discussing it before the pod started, just a preseason legend, right? Like, back to the Minnesota days, he was just a guy who would absolutely erupt in preseason. Most fantasy managers will remember him for the notorious faceplant in championship week in 2019. He was like the most added player in the you know, yeah, biggest right. week on the fantasy calendar. And then Dalvin Cook had a shoulder. Alexander Mattison might have been dinged too. And Mike Boone was set to just go supernova. And I think he gave us like 20 some rushing yards. Right. And then the following week in week 17, when nobody's playing for anything, then he went off. Then he went for like 160 total yards, something like that. But anyway, that's the guy we're chasing here. Cause he's actually available in like something like 99% of Yahoo leagues. Right. While Melvin is taken in 70%+.
Yeah, week three, like I mentioned, Mike Boone got on the field for 13 offensive snaps and ran a route on every single one of those snaps. He only got one target. He didn't actually touch the ball ever at all, but they were sort of kind of mixing him in anyways before this, which was going to be
a really bad drop against the Raiders. He had a really bad drop against the Raiders. And the week before, I want to say it was the week. I mean, he's caught like 2 of 5 balls, and a couple of them have been pretty clear drops.
Which is funny, too, because I wouldn't profile him as the passing guy in this offense anyway. It's like Melvin Gordon has had a passing down role for, you know, early parts of his Chargers career. So I think also we'll talk more about the backfield split when we get to pickups, but this just keeps it makes me continue to worry about the Broncos offense overall. I already thought coming into this year, and I've said it several times, that they were going to get off to a slow start, that they were kind of an overrated unit talent wise anyways. And this is now two key pieces that they've lost in Tim Patrick in training camp, and now Javonte Williams here early in the season. Jerry Jeudy and Courtland Sutton, I still think those guys they've been fine in fantasy, but I think they've been up and down real life players. And then, you know, KJ Hamler, like I think they said yesterday on the broadcast, oh, that's his first catch of the season. I was like, that's his first catch of the season? Because he's been off and on with this, like recovering from a serious injury himself. I don't know, man. Offensive line is playing kind of mixed so far. Russell definitely been a mixed bag. So I remain very concerned about the Broncos overall. This is not the way you'd be wanting it to trend, considering they did not get off to a great start this year offensively.
Yeah, it's a totally valid concern. And to your point that you were making, you know, preseason when we were wondering about the Broncos and like, what if it's not perfect right away? This is a different team altogether. But Nyheim Hines had some really interesting and really candid comments about like, you probably read the same thing, right? About like what it's been like over the past few years, new quarterback, absolutely every season, talking about the growing pains that they have to revisit every summer with an even though they're veteran quarterbacks. And he you know, he was so diplomatic too. Like, he didn't throw anybody under the bus. It wasn't like a major criticism of Matt Ryan. It was simply the fact of having to break in a new quarterback absolutely every offseason. And so they're not like a team that gets to build off of what they did the year prior, right? And that's kind of what Denver's going through right now. And it doesn't matter how talented everybody is, it's still a reset.
Yeah, and maybe we could just move right into the Jonathan Taylor news off of that, because it flows well, Andy. But I do think, and I know fantasy managers hate to hear it, and I know even NFL fans hate to hear it, and you know, some media hates to hear it. But like, I think that's what September is for a lot of these teams that don't like really go hard in the paint for preseason, and especially teams that have a lot of transition, like the Broncos did. I mean, the Packers, to a certain degree, they're breaking in an offense without a superstar player, even if it's not a quarterback. You know, the Colts are certainly this version. And it's funny too, Andy, because I read those Nyheim Hines quotes, and it also struck in my head too that not only are they breaking in a new quarterback every year, it's like a different style of guy, right? Like they go from Jacoby Brissett to Phillip Rivers to then Carson Wentz to Matt Ryan. There might be some overlap between Matt Ryan and Phillip Rivers, but that was like 2 years ago in the NFL, might as well be a freaking lifetime, right? Like that was in 2020. Give me a break. So I did take some credence to that. And the good news coming out of Colts, you know, if there's any good news coming out of the Colts right now, it's that tests on Jonathan Taylor's ankle were negative. He actually has a chance to play on Thursday night, according to a source said to Adam Schefter. So that was surprising. Colts have also ruled out linebacker Shaquille Leonard with a concussion for week 5 against the Broncos. We're talking about these two teams. They're going to play on Thursday night. I haven't seen what the opening line is, but I mean, give me the under on this game. These are two teams that are not off the hot start so far this year.
Yeah, I would always be surprised if a guy who suffers an injury that seems serious in the moment and has to come back for a Thursday night game, if he actually plays, that would be a little shocking to me. It's pretty murky in that backfield too. Like, obviously Nyheim Hines is a veteran, is a good player, but doesn't really profile as somebody that you're just going to feed the ball 25 or 30 times, right? He probably just has the Nyheim Hines role, and they make do with, you know, whether it's Philip Lindsay off the practice squad, whether it's Deion Jackson, like guys. I mean, we all know what Lindsay is. It's less certain what Deion Jackson is. It's not going to be great. There's nobody here that is Jonathan Taylor. And Jonathan Taylor right now isn't necessarily the peak version of Jonathan Taylor. So this is going to be really ugly.
Deion Jackson, man. I mean, come on. That's a undrafted in 2021 coming out of Duke. That's we'll see. We'll see. Philip Lindsay, yeah, by the way, is like, the shine has really come off of Philip Lindsay after he had like an interesting start to his career again. But it is a revenge game against the Broncos, so do keep that in mind. All right, the other big running back news of the day, Cordarrelle Patterson is headed to IR. Pretty big bummer, because I think this was set up to be a good season for him. Scott and I were talking about it on the podcast last night. Like, he obviously came into this game pretty banged up. Ian Rapoport said he was dealing with the injury last week, played through it despite serious pain, but he should return right at 4 weeks. The Falcons are already kind of a shallow offensive unit to begin with, and now they're losing a guy that's run pretty well for them in Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah, it's a bummer in part because it's such a unique story, right? And this is like, Cordarrelle Patterson's career is just unlike any other, right? There's nobody who comes in as an elite return man who manages to transition to two different positions and you know, perform, you know, adequately well as a receiver and then great as a running back. This is wild. I can't think of another case like this. So really interesting career, really fun player. It's a bummer. It's great that it's not a worst case scenario. It seems like probably the responsible thing for the team to do. But looking at that backfield, Damian Williams is still on IR. He went on IR early in the season with a rib issue and is going to be there, I think, until week 6 at the earliest. There haven't really been many updates on him. It's a rib thing, so I wouldn't imagine it's going to cost him an extraordinary amount of time. Tyler Allgeier has looked, I mean, he looked really good in week 4. But Caleb Huntley also looked kind of good in week 4. He actually managed to score. They each saw 10 carries. Allgeier doubled up Huntley in terms of snaps, and Allgeier's got a little juice as a receiver. Finished the game with over 100 total yards. Looks really good. So we're getting a nice little, we're going to get like a 1 or 2 week look at these guys. And Allgeier is the player that I've been, I don't know that I'm most heavily invested in him, but I got him stashed in a lot of places. It's not an ideal matchup coming up, right? Like they hit a tough patch of the schedule. It's Tampa Bay, and then it might be the Niners after that. So this is not, this is not the idea. There are some headwinds here, but they at least get, you know, an opportunity at a pretty significant role.
Yeah, it feels a little, and, you know, knock on wood, whatever, it feels a little straightforward with the whole Caleb Huntley, Tyler Allgeier thing. Like you mentioned, Allgeier, 24 snaps. He definitely played on like third down passing situations. He ran 8 routes to just 1 for Huntley. Obviously, Cordarrelle Patterson figured in as well with 5 routes. He had 11 touches overall, 10 for Huntley, but Huntley had 2 at the goal line. So like it kind of seems like Huntley's their banger. Allgeier, though, might have more passing down equity, which if I'm looking at a Falcons back, you know, I probably want the guy with more passing down equity than goal line equity, because this offense still is like, I mean, Marcus Mariota has to be one of the most disappointing like players that a bunch of fantasy folks like me talked about and got pretty excited about coming into this last week. I think this offense is still trying to find itself. So I'll take the passing down back over the banger back there in Huntley.
I haven't watched this full game yet, like start to finish. It seemed to me that Huntley basically got a series, right? Like most of his carries, most of his snaps were like a single series. Got the goal line plunge on that one. Like obviously looked good, but I'd be surprised if Allgeier doesn't end up having either a 3-1 or certainly a 2-1 edge in snaps.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, a couple other quick ones here. Treylon Burks, rookie wide receiver, left yesterday's game with a foot injury. Been diagnosed with turf toe. There's a chance, maybe by the time you're listening to this, that he's going to be placed on IR. He's definitely going to miss some time, which I had two reactions to this. One, it lets off every fantasy manager. Like, how many fantasy analysts over the entire weeks 1 to 4 is like, this is the week for Treylon Burks. This is the week for Treylon Burks. We can be let off the hook now. You don't have to do that every single week now. But also, and more importantly, I think this is a huge bummer for Burks, who I've said this a couple of times throughout this year, is basically playing a new position with the fact that he's not playing this like gadget slot, you know, backfield role. And he's been running out as the pure X receiver for the Tennessee Titans. He needs those reps because he's just not ready to be like that guy on a route by route basis. And I think we've seen that over, you know, he really wasn't looking that great even yesterday before the injury, unfortunately. So he's a developmental player. It could come together in time, but losing reps like this, I always hate to see it for a young wide receiver because like that's making this massive transition. Like Drake London missed all that time in preseason, but it's like, okay, he'll just go back out there and do what he did in college, which is basically what he's done in the NFL. He's been an X receiver and he's been dominant at it. Burks is making a huge transition, and now with the time off, it's another hurdle for a guy that I think already had hurdles to jump.
Yeah, it's such a good point. And for people who haven't either had this injury themselves, which I hope you haven't, or who haven't like managed a fantasy team and had one of their stars affected by it, this isn't just like, 3 weeks and you're fine in many cases. Like sometimes this sucks. Is even when they come back, they are far less efficient and they are in a lot of pain. And it is really hard to do anything other than, you know, like you can run, but you can only run in a straight line and everything else hurts. And it's, you know, it is often something where it's kind of see you next year.
Yeah. Which is, again, just a huge bummer for a guy that I think needed the reps. So we'll see what happens with Burks the rest of the way. I think we'll probably see him towards the back half of the year, but it's going to be a little bit. A couple other pieces of news here. Mike McDaniel announces that Tua Tagovailoa is going to be out versus the Jets. He's still in the concussion protocol. Obviously, after what we saw the last couple of weeks, that's good and probably to be expected. So Teddy Bridgewater will get the start against the Jets. Defense that, you know, is not a good matchup for guys like Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Like those two with their speed, with their route running should fillet that secondary, which has been filleted quite often this year.
Yeah, it's the Dolphins receivers are just like an unsolvable problem because you might be able to scheme to stop one guy with like 4.2 speed, but I don't know what you do with two guys like that. They're so good. And it's, you know, normally you think of Teddy as sort of a, I don't know, like a paint by numbers sort of quarterback, right? He's not super inventive or anything like that. He's not going to push the ball downfield 70 yards, 75 yards. Put every ounce of strength he had into that throw to Tyreek on Thursday night. But with these receivers, it's a little different. Like I can see his ceiling being a little bit higher than we would normally consider it.
Last thing here, Adam Schefter reports. And by the way, you know you are down bad as a franchise when I read this news item and I'm like, oh man, that's a bummer. Schefter reports that Panthers quarterback Sam Darnold, yes, that Sam Darnold is now eligible to come off injured reserve, but he's still not close. Not close. The savior Sam Darnold is not close to being back from his high ankle sprain he suffered in late August, per source. It's still, in the words of said source, according to Schefter, going to be a while. If you look at like any, you know, EPA per drop back, completion percentage over expectation, like a couple guys, you know, they do like the graphs, right, where x-axis, y-axis is each metric. Baker Mayfield is like at the bottom corner. He is I'm struggling to think about I'm really struggling to think about like a worst quarterback that I've seen over the last like 2 years running out like as the starter early in the season. It is really, really that bad. It's hard to over exaggerate.
It's pretty wild because he had an injury related excuse last season. But just thinking back to where he was after a pretty promising rookie year, you know, there was conversation about, boy, Browns are going to have to pay him. This is a $35, $40 million quarterback, right? And now we're at the stage where, I mean, it's such an indictment of Mayfield that we're even giving Sam Darnold updates, that this is even whether it's fantasy relevant or NFL relevant at all. It is such an indictment of the player. And then, hey, let's look at the Panthers schedule next 3 weeks, Niners, Rams, Bucks. Like it gets challenging in a hurry. Like they're actually through some of the easiest weeks that they're going to have. And now they're coming into like some real defenses, you know? So this is a pretty bleak stretch. We're at a stage where I think only McCaffrey is obviously startable.
Yeah. I was tweeting with fellow scorned Panthers fan, Josh Norris, about it this morning. He made the point that his co-host on the Underdog Football Show, Hayden Winks, said like a squeaky wheel gets the grease game for DJ Moore is like 6 for 50. And it's like, oh, that's great. what a win for DJ Moore. 50 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like such an idiot for saying over the summer, like when they had a quarterback competition between, you know, Darnold and Baker, like enough already. Like, I don't want to hear Sam Darnold about it. And now like we're here in week four, like, and by the way, I just want to be clear. I do not give a damn about the Panthers. Like I haven't been a real fan of the Panthers since like probably, I don't know, 12 years ago. But it's just depressing. It's just depressing. That now I'm like, okay, where's Sam Darnold? Like, can he come back? Hey, Sam Darnold was pretty good in the first 3 weeks of last year before everything went to hell. Nothing's really gone to hell for the Panthers except Baker Mayfield so far this year, which is a tough look.
I will say that Sam Darnold can be like funny bad, and Baker Mayfield is just sort of a sad bad.
that is a perfect way of putting it. You're right. Sam Darnold will at least try to do cool stuff and fail.
Yes.
Baker can't even do the basic stuff. It's so bad. And Baker after the game, like, we could either let you guys divide us or we could come together. Oh my God, Baker, enough already. That's cute. That's cute when you're like on a good team. You're not. So enough already. Okay. Let's move on here to Sunday Night Football. Chiefs 41, Buccaneers 31. I mean, Mahomes just doing some outrageous stuff in this game, especially in the first half. Some real alien stuff, Andy. But there's a lot of like big time fantasy takeaways here in this game as well. What jumps out to you first?
The running back usage for the Chiefs is always interesting, because like CEH has been doing this, and I don't even know where he is right now in the year to date running back scoring situation, but he's surely top five, right? Like, he came in as like a top six fantasy running back without even really playing. Like, this was the first game where he even saw like over 50% of the snaps, right? Like, he plays like 40% of the snaps most weeks. Got a big
He's running
workload.
Back four, by the way. He's the RB4 in Yahoo scoring.
I mean, he's literally barely playing. A huge percentage of his touches are touchdowns, but also he's a Chief. So like that, sometimes that's life in the Chiefs offense. I mean, Damian Williams had like a half season or six games or seven games or whatever in which he was carrying us, and he was doing it on like 10 touches, 12 touches a game, right? He didn't even get full workload. So like, this has happened in Kansas City before. Probably shouldn't be shocking. That alone is wild. Like, where he is in the year-to-date scoring situation is pretty wild. And then Isaiah Pacheco came into this game, and it seemed pretty clear that not only was Collinsworth enamored with him, but had been fed some Pacheco propaganda in the run-up to the game. That was fun too. And he just, like, he looked electric. Like, it's fun. Pacheco looked really good. Obviously, if something were to happen to CEH, Pacheco would get really interesting in a hurry. Fun player. Also, like a little bit of a wild story, if you watched any Big Ten football over the last 3 years or so, it's crazy that we're at this point with Isaiah Pacheco, who was just mired in a dreadful situation with Rutgers, was pretty inefficient as a college runner. And now that he's sort of freed, and now that he gets a free run to the line of scrimmage on a great team, like, he just absolutely looks electric. So he was really fun as well. In a general sense, what a pleasure to watch this game. I loved Patrick Mahomes in his post-game comments. Was asked about, you know, oh, if this is the last time that he's meeting Tom Brady, and gave a great answer, something to the effect of how people keep telling him that this is going to be the last time that he meets Tom Brady, and Tom Brady like just keeps showing up. So, like, I don't know if this is the last time, but it was a joy. Like almost 800 total yards of offense here, 72 total points, total fun.
Yeah, on the backfield stuff. You know, CEH, Scott and I talked about him. Scott said something about CEH, so we had to bring him up several times during the recap podcast. Just, we don't normally react live to the game, but it was just because we had said some. I can't remember now. You know, my brain's fried at this point, but I can't remember exactly what we said about CEH. But it was like, he scores two touchdowns. He has that brutal, brutal drop when he's wide open. Probably could have moonwalked into the end zone.
He'd still be running. Yeah.
Yeah, he'd still be running, right? Like, that's the CEH experience. But it is funny that we've kind of come full circle with CEH, that all we cared about when he came in the NFL, it's like, yeah, I don't care about how good he is, but he's the Chiefs running back, right? Like, and that's kind of where we're at still. Although, yeah, when Pacheco gets in there, it feels a little different, right? He brings a little more pop to it, a little more physicality. So I'm sure we'll hear more from Pacheco going forward. But I mean, for now, CEH, like, he's on every. And this is one of my things where it's like, is this stuff like even actionable information? Like, you could sit there and say like, oh, CEH is sell high. But like, who's really going out of their way to trade CEH? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But I feel like you just ride this train until the wheels fall off, right? Because how many other running backs are really out there giving you like this sort of weekly ceiling?
Yeah, I think you do. And like, it's not like the CEH brand is so strong among fantasy managers.
No,
right?
No,
like,
it is not. It's actually quite the opposite.
Yeah, we're talking about four games here, and almost everybody who plays our game has been burned by CEH at some point, or at least been, you know, mildly inconvenienced by CEH at some point. So I don't think you're going to sell him as if he's a top five running back. I don't think you're fetching that price for CEH right now. And like, I don't know. He might regress, but the Chiefs offense probably isn't going to regress. There's still just a ton of yards and points here, and he's well positioned to get a pretty good share of that. So I don't, like, you're absolutely not going to land, I don't know, Jonathan Taylor. You're not going to land like some running back who's off to a slow start, who is an obvious, you know, who is an obvious win. So I'd probably ride him too.
Chiefs receiver core, the only thing I'll note, look, like, Juju is what he is, right? I know people are still kind of pissed off about Juju, but like, he's probably what you drafted him as, which is like a wide receiver three that you don't feel great about. I think the upside case for him is probably a little diminished at this point.
This is one of those seasons for Juju, by the way, where like, if he just stays healthy, he's going to have like a weird, sneaky wide receiver 18 finish or something like that. And you'll just like, and he's going to do it based on a bunch of, you know, 14 point weeks that didn't really help you win.
Yeah, for sure. Unless he starts scoring touchdowns, which is, you know, there's no indication he's going to start scoring touchdowns. So we'll see. I would also note, too, that Sky Moore did get a little more involved in this game. 11 routes, 36.4% targets per route run. I know it's been a little weird that he hasn't played at all, but, and I'm not advising you to go pick him up, but I won't be surprised if in a couple of weeks we're talking about him as like a getting an early guy when he starts to leap a guy like Mecole Hardman. MVS, I mean, I know he had a couple of big catches down the field, but ugh, come on, man. Like, they're playing MVS way too much. So anything on the Bucs side? I mean, it was really, this was the Bucs team we were promised, right? This was the Bucs team that I didn't want to be starting freaking Marcus Mariota over this version of Tom Brady. I wanted to be starting Mariota over the version of Tom Brady we got last week, right? Because all the guys were out there healthy. I mean, Julio Jones, he's questionable. I got the, you know, weekly notification that he's questionable after the game on my phone. That's of course going to happen. But, you know, the guys that are the established players in this receiver core, Mike Evans goes off. This was definitely the Mike Evans I was excited to see this year. 103 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah,
clear cut best receiver on the team. Chris Godwin, 7 for 10 in terms of catches on targets. You know, Leonard Fournette was involved as a receiver. What else we got here from the Bucs offense?
Well, you mentioned earlier that like Melvin Gordon is the only guy who previously hadn't had to really pay for his fumbles. Rashad White had a fumble on the opening kickoff.
Yes, he did.
That could have sent him into exile, but he actually got, you know, he got a fair amount of run. Scored a touchdown in this game, looked really good. It's, you know, it's been kind of nice to see. Like, Rashad White didn't have to pay a heavy penalty for an early fumble that probably, honestly, as well as Kansas City was playing, like, the game turned, like, after the opening kickoff, and then it seemed like a runaway train for Kansas City. So it was good to see Rashad White get involved and play reasonably well. That was excellent. It was also just nice to see this offense, like, when most of the receiving core is in place and functional, like, this is what it is. Brady finally with a healthy dose of pass attempts, right? I think he threw the ball 52 times, and he's obviously still great. I know that people had been disappointed with the early returns, but even in the games where he wasn't really helping you, that guy still spins it. He's still got a great arm and great timing. And, you know, the problem was he was throwing to Breshad Perriman and Scotty Miller and Cole Beasley. And now he's back to throwing to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. We did have a couple of injury scares here. Godwin again, like, slow to get up on a play. And you were like, oh no, don't let this happen. Seems like he's come out of it just fine. And then Brady himself was, you know, stretching out the shoulder a little bit after a sack. Seems like he's going to be okay as well.
Yeah, we'll talk more about Rashad White in the running back pickup section, which we're going to get to right after this break. All right, Andy, let's jump into our pickups for the week. Let's start at the running back position, and we can just pick it right up at Rashad White, who you have on the list here. The Bucs had they had 3 total yards from their running backs in this game, which is pretty hilarious. Those 3 yards do belong to Rashad White, who also popped in a touchdown. He actually outsnapped Leonard Fournette in the second half. I don't know if that's like a thing going forward, but we've talked about him as a guy that, like, in the getting in early section on this show, pretty much, I feel like, every week. I like that you have him now graduated as a guy that you should probably go ahead and, like, make sure Rashad White is stuck at the end of your bench just in case.
Yeah, I think the primetime touchdown does it, right? Like, we're not getting in early anymore. Like, that was a pretty clear signal. Leonard Fournette coming into week 4 had played virtually every snap for that team, which is not usually a sustainable situation for any player. Najee Harris managed to kind of sort of do it last year, and obviously McCaffrey had the season where he did it, but it's not, that's that's tough. Not many people make it through that. So they're going to have to get somebody else involved. White is a wonderful receiver. Like his, you know, not to say that I watched every game of his in college, but he was one of my favorite backs to watch in the lead up to the draft. Just a really, really gifted receiver. It's pretty easy to imagine a scenario where anything at all happens to Leonard Fournette, even an injury that he's playing through, that creates playing time for Rashad White. If he's getting double digit touches a game in a Tom Brady led offense, I'm super interested in that. So he's not at the top of the board for me for pickups this week at running back. And I know this is a week when people are going to have a great need with the Patterson situation, the Javonte situation, but he is somebody who could be an absolute home run late in the year.
Yeah. 100%. I agree. Like he should just be, and a couple of the other guys like here that you have, like Isaiah Pacheco, we talked about him. The only other guy, like you also have Mike Boone, you have Tyler Allgeier and Caleb Huntley and Deion Jackson or Philip Lindsay. I have no idea. Anything else you want to add specifically with these guys, or we kind of cover it in the news?
Yeah. We should almost treat Raheem Mostert separately.
Yeah. True.
Because he's rostered in about 50% of Yahoo leagues. So I like to mention those guys here. You know, if they reach a certain threshold, we don't talk about them. But, and it could very well be that the Miami backfield is just one that we want to stay away from, except that they keep producing usable weeks, right? And it's not
just
that
never
easy
the
to
guy that you think.
right. Like even in a week when Mostert like dominates the snaps and the touches, as happened last week, he played like 72% of the snaps. He was great. They fed him, but he's not the guy who found the end zone. That was Chase Edmonds the week before, like getting goal line usage, finding the end zone. So this could be pretty frustrating, but it was at least notable that Mostert was the pretty clear number one last week. Again, that could flip, but you've got the Jets coming up on the schedule. Presumably they're going to lean on the run just a bit. And Mostert, you know, in the most recent game, appeared to be the guy. So if he's out there, I think he's definitely worth a claim. He's definitely worth a couple of fab dollars. I think the guy that interests me most here is probably Mike Boone, but that is just a loaded situation. You know, if I were in a desperate situation, fantasy wise, like I was either winless or I was 1-4, you should start thinking anyway about just emptying the wallet on players because like realistically you get to 1-5 and the probability of you making the playoffs is not great. The probability of you winning the league is not great. So like you've probably got to have a pretty short time horizon. I think if I were well situated right now, I'm a 3-1 team, something like that, I'm not going to empty the wallet for Mike Boone. I think he's probably going to have like the best case scenario short term, I would imagine, is a 50-50 split with Melvin. That wouldn't surprise me a whole lot. Melvin obviously has receiving credentials. He's the guy that I would prefer to have on a roster. That said, he was clearly doghoused in week four. And that lasted even after Javonte's injury. So, and he's not holding onto the football. So like, If Melvin gets the lead role in week five against the Colts and comes out and has a first half fumble like that, you know, it's going to tilt back to Mike Boone. Like Melvin's probably one fumble away, two fumbles away from just not being a usable player at all for the Broncos in Hackett's mind. So we've got to be aware of that. So Mike Boone, again, we talked about him earlier. He was an almost hilarious fantasy disappointment a few years ago when he was like the guy to add for championship week and then just had an absolute total dud. So checkered history. He's been a great preseason player. We've not yet seen him for an extended period of time in any sort of featured role, but there's such an opportunity in Denver right now. So Mike Boone probably has to be the priority. And again, I'm pretty interested in Tyler Allgeier, a guy that I'd already stashed in a million places for basically this exact scenario where we've got a running back who's north of 30, who suffered some injuries last year, now is going to be gone for 4 weeks. Like there's a little bit of a runway for Allgeier where there's just no way over the next 4 weeks that Allgeier is not going to be a, you know, 12 touch, 15 touch, 16 touch a game player. And that obviously has value in almost any league.
I keep kind of, as you're talking, I'm trying to work through my thought here that, you know, oftentimes I say like you kind of want to just empty that fab early on. Now there hasn't been like a running back that's emerged yet that's been like a season changer, right? Like Jeff Wilson has been Fine. Any of these guys, too. I don't think like Mike Boone, Tyler Allgeier, and you know whoever comes from the Colts obviously are going to be some kind of season saver or something like that. Mostly because all three of those offenses stink. Like none of them are, you know, we just talk about CEH. Like if CEH went down, Isaiah Pacheco might be a season saver, right? Like if Leonard Fournette went down, Rashad White might be a season saver. That's why we're kind of trying to say that you should have these guys stashed away. Really, it's been the receivers that have been like, okay, if you emptied the fab for Garrett Wilson, I think you're probably going to feel okay about that. You know, that's kind of been the position where, you know, guys have sort of kind of come out of nowhere and given you at least like weekly, you know, weekly usability. Even a guy like Curtis Samuel is still the wide receiver 15 in Yahoo standard scoring. So like, I don't know. It's the fab management is one of my weak that in trades, anything that involves like psychology, I think one, you can't even really give good advice on as a fantasy analyst. And two, I'm not really good at as a fantasy player, probably because I don't have the time to like invest in that in my own leagues. Cause you know, it's a whole other thing, but anyways, all right.
Think that once we're in season, it becomes so situational.
It becomes so league sensitive. Trades especially. The worst question, Andy, to get is like, hey, I want to trade for this guy. Who should I offer? It's like, dude,
right.
I'm really not trying to be in like a jerk about this, right? When people ask that question, but it's like, I don't know, man. Like, what does the person who has that guy on their roster, what do they need? What do you have? Like, it's impossible for me to answer unless we're going to spend 15 minutes together on the phone talking it over. And guess what? We're not going to do that.
One of the things that I almost regret doing it in the pickups column, but I always try to give like a recommended, you know, fab offer. But it's again, it's so situational. And some of you, like if you're sitting there at 4-0, you should be thinking about December. You should be thinking about, what is the best version of my lineup in the most important weeks? Like, because it's going to be hard for you to miss the playoffs. You can do it. You can still miss the playoffs. Like the buys haven't started yet, and there's a million injuries ahead of us. You could still miss it, but you've banked 4 wins. That's a huge deal. If you're 1-3, you're 0-4. Like you got to win. Your fab management should be about week 5 and week 5 alone. And some of you should be thinking much longer term. And listen, that's where we get the rich get richer scenarios, where those are the folks that are able to just throw a couple of fab bucks at, you know, Rashad White, Zamir White, players who are at Pacheco, players who can be stashed right now, where there's not going to be like a bidding frenzy. But there's going to be a 1-3 team in your league that throws $60, $50 at Mike Boone. I don't want to be that guy. Like I think the ceiling for Mike Boone is pretty limited. Be a great story if he actually blows up, but I think it's probably pretty limited. I think there's no path for him to be a 20 touch guy on a weekly basis.
Yeah. 100% agree. All right, let's move to wide receivers, starting with Michael Gallup, who it was so awesome to see Michael Gallup catch a touchdown, ran a route, I think on 80%+ of Cooper Rush's dropbacks. Michael Gallup is pretty much back to being regular Michael Gallup, you know, obviously re-injury notwithstanding.
Yeah, that was for me, that was the key, right? That every time Cooper Rush dropped back, basically Michael Gallup was running a route. There was some hidden production to Michael Gallup's day because he drew like 65 yards in PI flags, right? Which is frustrating as a fantasy manager, but that's also like, it's a big deal for the Cowboys.
Helpful for the team, yeah.
He is a stress the defense guy, and he's, you know, he's good on 50-50 balls. He might be the best receiver on this team in terms of like 50-50 like jump ball situations. Again, I know I've made this point before, but he's already got an 1,100 yard season. Like we've seen what the best of Michael Gallup is, and it's really good. It was nice to see, you know, I know he didn't do that much like in terms of box score production other than the touchdown. But it was really nice to see the touchdown as like an improvisational moment between him and Cooper Rush. Like, right. Like you would have thought that, you know, my guess would be, okay, Cooper Rush finds a little bit of trouble. He's looking for CeeDee Lamb or he's looking for Noah Brown, but he found Michael Gallup, which was just great to see. And the usage indicates that there's no easing him in, right? The easing in of Michael Gallup was the resting him for the first 3 weeks of the season, which, hey, maybe that's what the Bucs should have done with Godwin. I don't know. But now that he's been now that he's back, he's like fully back.
Yeah, totally agree with you on that one. By the way, I just got onto Twitter real quick to find a stat that I'm looking for one of you guys. And Andrew Luck is trending, which is not what the Colts.
Oh, no.
That's not a good sign.
I don't know what Andrew Luck is doing right now, but man, it would be great if he like, if he owns an island and he's put on a couple hundred pounds and he's just like,
I think he's the exact opposite. I'm pretty sure he just, from what I've heard listening to like I didn't listen to all of the Luck podcasts that The Athletic did, but I listened to some of like the interviews that Zach Kiefer did about it, which is, you know, great stuff by me. I did listen to a couple of the episodes, just timing wise, not great. But anyways, I think the point of it was like, he still lives in Indianapolis and is just like, he's sometimes spotted around town, and he's actually lost a lot of weight. I think he looks like pretty, you know, thin and just like a regular guy, but yeah. Never coming back to football.
He went like the triathlon route. Sure. Of course.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. All right. Well, we don't need to break down Andrew Luck on a fantasy podcast in the year 2022. That's for sure. because I know Colts fans were just a lot. And the Luck podcast apparently was great. Another couple episodes I listened to about it was great, but it is really funny that, you know, every time, Zach Kiefer, who's a great, you know, Colts writer for The Athletic, would tweet it out. You just read the mentions, or like the replies from Colts fans. You're like, this is so good, but it hurts so bad to listen to. Yeah. So I'm sorry if any Colts fans are listening to this and hear this. But I don't know. I'm sure I'm going to reference it again now with Dalton in a couple of days when we preview the damn Colts on Thursday Night Football. Anyways, let's get out of this miserable cycle. Who are some other receivers that people can pick up this week?
I'm just going to toss out a couple of boring vets, first of which is Corey Davis, because Zach Wilson loves him some Corey Davis. They connected several times last year. They connected in week 4. He's not any sort of priority for me, but as like, you know, if you're thinking of like your fourth priority at receiver as you place bids, as you place offers, like keep him in mind for $1, for $2, something like that. Also, I would expect Jacoby Myers to come back pretty soon. I think he was limited in practice all last week. So like normally a guy like that, if he doesn't play, he's real close. And the interesting thing about him, despite the fact that the quarterback situation could be really abysmal, Detroit's on the schedule. And Detroit is just giving up a zillion yards and zillion points every week, and they can't figure it out. And so Jacoby Myers is probably the one Patriots receiver again, if he's good to go, that I would feel okay about next week. And then we have some fun rookies to talk about. I know I mentioned George Pickens all the time. Like, he was great. A week after he delivered the catch of the year, which I'm pretty confident is going to hold up for the full season, he goes over 100 yards. Chase Claypool does nothing except for, you know, bat a deep ball into the hands of an opposing player, right? Like, terrible game for Chase Claypool. Just an absolutely miserable effort that would have fit perfectly into his 2021. that was exactly last year's version of Chase Claypool. So Pickens, I thought, was great. I don't know what it's going to look like with Kenny Pickett, but Kenny Pickett is at least fun in a way that Mitch was not going to be fun.
Yes.
So I think Pickens can be a thing. One of your guys, Alec Pierce, has been pretty good now a couple weeks in a row. This is like 140 receiving yards over the last couple weeks. I love, you know, in the middle of a ugly day for the Colts offense generally. First of all, the visual on this pass was incredible because, like, shaded field, Matt Ryan throws into darkness. Like, you couldn't even see where the ball was going, but Matt Ryan put like every ounce of strength he had into a deep throw that was clearly just like a F it. Alec Pierce is out there somewhere in the darkness, and Pierce settles under a deep ball and makes a catch. Like, I like that kind of relationship between a quarterback and a receiver, even if it's a sketchy quarterback at this stage of his career. Yeah. So Pierce has been fun, and it probably only gets better from here. I mean, you've discussed it before. Like, Pierce is a pretty raw prospect, but wow, does he have athletic tools, right? He's like a 4.3 guy with a 40-inch vertical, and they're using him deep, and that's been pretty promising. And then the last name I'll throw out is Khalil Shakir in Buffalo. Yeah. Pretty interesting player right now with a great opportunity because, you know, Isaiah McKenzie unfortunately was concussed in week 4. Jamison Crowder suffers an ankle injury in week 4. Shakir found his way onto the field, caught both of his targets. Pretty talented guy with a really impressive collegiate highlight reel. So Shakir is probably going to get interesting. Like, if you can find a spot on your roster for a receiver connected to Josh Allen, I would recommend Shakir.
Yeah, you're talking about one of my guys. Like, Khalil Shakir was definitely like my day 3 receiver that I really liked in this class. And a couple of things here on Shakir. But before I talk about Khalil Shakir, I did go on Twitter to get this stat from Jacob Gibbs from CBS Fantasy, just on Corey Davis. Corey Davis and Elijah Moore have run 129 routes together with Zach Wilson at quarterback. Targets 31 to 21 in favor of Corey Davis. Air yards 356 to 243 in favor of Corey Davis. PPR points 60.6 to Corey Davis, 24.9 for Elijah Moore. Not what you want to see. Corey Davis is a good player. I mean, he's a good player. He's probably just a guy at the wide receiver position, but he's a good player. So good to bring him up here, as much as it pains my heart for my guy Elijah Moore. My guy Khalil Shakir, though, can beat man coverage, can beat zone coverage. Pretty good, like, slot receiver prospect, although I think they've kind of tried to integrate him at multiple spots. So that is pretty interesting. Crowder, it sounds like, is out for – going to be out for a while, like, potentially indefinitely. You know, McKenzie might miss a week. Who knows? It's with, obviously, with concussions. We really never know. So you're so right to bring him up. And I just think he's a good player, man. Like, he has great contact balance too in the open field. Like, everybody is trying to be like, Treylon Burks, the next Deebo Samuel. Like, stop. Khalil Shakir actually does have, like, some Deebo Samuel-ish, like, open field ability with the way he does, like, run outside stretch plays really well. More as a receiver than, obviously, a running back. The way he has great contact balance in the open field at Boise State, he was really good at that. So somebody tethered to Josh Allen that I think can play is absolutely on the radar. And, you know, behind Stephon Diggs, I know the Gabe Davis bros don't want to hear this, and Gabe Davis has been playing with an injury. He hasn't been a heavily targeted player throughout the course of the season. The injury certainly has to be taken into account. But he's also like a fourth round pick. You know, it's not like Gabe Davis is some dude they drafted in the first round. Like, there is a scenario, probably unlikely, where Khalil Shakir really comes in and balls right away and, like, is sort of like Gabe Davis was as a rookie, who pops up, like, late in the season.
Yeah, I think Davis is going to, and you're right to point out the injury, still very early in the season, but there's a pretty good chance that Gabe Davis finds his value this year off of the strength of, like, three or four games, right? And there's just going to be a lot of dead spots in the season. And that's, the injury isn't going to make that any better. Hopefully it's a quick recovery. Hopefully he's able to play through it. But there's a pretty good chance that he develops into that sort of receiver, which is still useful for fantasy, but it's not the, you know, absolute, like, burning supernova that perhaps you thought Gabe Davis was going to be. Shakir is also just, like, I don't know, give him a quick Twitter search and, like, just on the highlights alone, like, he made some really fun plays at Boise State. And Boise State is always a really fun environment, and it's not uncommon, trying to be diplomatic, like, it's not uncommon for Boise State players to be, like, the only guy in the camera frame, right, occasionally, but still, the highlights for Shakir were really, really fun.
Yeah, 100%. Really think he is good at the game. Quarterbacks and tight ends, certainly no season savers here. Definitely not at the tight end position. Anyone that really is important to flag at these spots, Andy?
I think Geno Smith has just simply become a playable quarterback in fantasy, which is a little weird. It's not what I expected. But I don't want to say they're letting him cook, but they are clearly letting him cook. He's putting the ball in the air a lot. And when he puts the ball in the air, it's going to DK Metcalf and it's going to Tyler Lockett. And that is a great way to make a living. He actually leads the NFL right now in completion percentage. And it's crazy. Like, he's completing 77.3% of his throws, which is shocking. Like, that's
I believe he is on the other end of that spectrum. Like, we talked about with Baker Mayfield in terms of, like, EPA completion percentage over expectation graph. Like, Baker is down here. Geno's where you want to be up here. He's like, I'm pretty sure he leads the NFL in completion percentage over expectation. He definitely did come into that game against the Lions. Certainly no reason to think he's dropped. I haven't looked it up, but I know he's fourth in the NFL in EPA per dropback. He shares the top five with Patrick Mahomes, Tua, Josh Allen, and Jalen Hurts. Like, he's been just legit good this year.
Yeah, he's just been good. It's not particularly fluky. He's faced some pretty good I mean, obviously, he's benefiting from the fact that he just faced the Lions and they just couldn't stop anybody. Did they have one stop? They might have had one stop all day. Like, just awful. He does have the Saints coming up. That's obviously a little bit more challenging. But still, he's been so good, and the quality of his receivers is just so high that I think Geno Smith is probably a guy that you're in a 12-team league. We're just going to be starting Geno Smith maybe for a while, which is fun. somebody associated with the Saints is going to get to face off against the Seattle defense next week, and obviously – you know, that crazy Lions Seahawks game doesn't get as wild as it was without the Seahawks defense contributing to it. They came into that thing allowing almost 9 yards per pass attempt. And then they gave up, you know, a 4-touchdown ridiculous day to Jared Goff in a day when he didn't have Amon-Ra St. Brown, didn't have DJ Chark, didn't have DeAndre Swift. Like, they didn't even have any weapons, and yeah, Jared Goff went off.
Your guy, T.J. Hawkinson, even looked good against that defense.
Oh, my God. They made T.J. Hawkinson look like, you know, vintage George Kittle, or briefly like the greatest of all Iowa tight ends. It was wild. And I don't know who's going to be at quarterback for the Saints. Like, it was a bit of a surprise that Jameis Winston couldn't return to practice last week, didn't play. The guy's got multiple fractures in his back. Again, I don't know that I would be podcasting if I had that. So it's no disrespect there for not playing football with a broken back. I probably wouldn't. If he can return, I'd play him against Seattle. If it's Andy Dalton, deep league, I might even play Andy Dalton against Seattle.
Yeah. Anything at tight end, you've got Hayden
Hurst. I hate this Colt situation. I hate that there's going to be a Colt tight end that is just going to catch 2 touchdowns each week, or like a touchdown, and we got to talk about him. Like, I feel like we have to mention Mo Alie-Cox. I would not go chasing Indianapolis tight ends. They have a wheel that they spin and it lands on a guy, and that guy catches the touchdown that week. I don't know that it's going to be Mo Alie-Cox going forward. I think he's a good player. I think he's an interesting athlete. I'm not going to make any promises about them. It was Woods a week ago. It's Mo Alie-Cox this time. Like, they'll invent a guy next week. I don't know. I'm sure we're going to talk about 5 other Colts tight ends over the course of the season. So I wouldn't place a strong offer for any of these guys. We should mention that Will Dissly has now caught, you know, I just talked about Geno Smith, and Will Dissly is now up to 3 touchdowns. Like, that guy's a sneaky good player. He's run more routes over the last couple of weeks than Kyle Pitts, which is a sad thing to say, but it is true. It's not like they're peppering Will Dissly with targets, but they obviously like him in the red zone. So he's kind of having the season that like Hunter Henry had last year. And that ends up having a lot of value in fantasy. Other guys,
we gave him a fat-ass contract coming off like a huge injury. So yeah, they like him.
The other guys that I have on the list are, you know, Hayden Hurst has looked really good basically all year, scored a touchdown last week. Matchup this week against Baltimore. Baltimore is obviously giving up a ton of yards through the air. And Taysom Hill is a fake tight end and a fake quarterback, and like a super fun play in fantasy. Scored a touchdown just last week. And he's got Seattle coming up. And we don't know who's going to be playing running back for the Saints. Like, maybe it's Murray and Ingram again. We don't know who's a quarterback. Like, they're clearly going to continue to use the gadgety version of Taysom Hill. So he's got a decent shot to score in any given week.
All right, Andy, let's move to some of our other ones here. We got getting in early. We both put Gus Edwards down here. I'd also say Brian Robinson, like, don't forget, he's getting activated. Yeah. I think it was announced today he's getting activated this week. We've talked about him on getting in early plenty of times. We don't know when he's actually going to play. Like, they'll have 3 weeks to actually, like, they've opened the window. They got 3 weeks to activate him. It's the whole thing, right? Like, he'll get activated at some point. Keep him in mind. But Gus Edwards also, John Harbaugh said he's going to return to practice this week. So J.K. Dobbins coming off a good game. But we've seen this backfield be split 50-50 when these two guys are healthy.
And they generally want to run a committee. Like, Justice Hill was playing very well, left with an injury, unfortunately, on Sunday. That was rough to see. But he was breaking off big runs. And, like, this team just loves Gus Edwards. They love him at the goal line. They love him basically as a guy that they, you know, like, he'll take a series, Dobbins will take a series. That's the way they used him. It's not like they each had a specialized role. So I would expect that when Gus Edwards returns, it'll be maybe at first it'll be like, you know, 2/3 of the touches go to Dobbins and 1/3 go to Edwards. But I would expect them to get Edwards back in the mix right away. And I'm sure nobody's going to be, especially in a week where, like, we're going to be falling all over ourselves for Mike Boone and some of these other guys. Nobody's going to fight you for Gus Edwards, but he is coming back. I guess another name that I would add to this is, we mentioned him earlier, is Damian Williams, who's at some point going to come back for Atlanta. I think he's first eligible in week 6, and obviously the Patterson injury leaves an opening for him.
Yeah, if you're one of those 4-0 teams that has just, you know, you haven't spent any of your fab so far, wait till the bidding period ends and like add Gus Edwards, add, you know, Damian Williams, like drop your, hey, if you're 4-0, you probably have like Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, or Jalen Hurts. You could probably just go ahead and drop your backup quarterback, drop your backup tight end, and, you know, keep it moving from there. All right. Let's talk about our drops, Andy. I'll go first and just say I have two rookie receivers. We talked about Treylon Burks. Like, you can definitely just go ahead and drop him if you were holding on to hope. Jahan Dotson, I know, is only going to miss 1 to 2 weeks, but I also think is a drop just because that Washington offense is going to be super volatile. Dotson has the most volatile role of the group. And my God, like, anytime Carson Wentz runs against a bad defense, bad pass rush, it's not going to be good. So let's I don't think we need to further break those guys down. Like, they're hurt. They're not going to help you in the next couple of weeks. You can go ahead and drop them. Andy, who are your guys?
Yeah, the first guy on my list, mentioned him earlier, was Chase Claypool. It just feels like such a waste of height and athleticism. And like, man, Chase Claypool came into the league. There was a, you know, you didn't have to throw very many criteria at it. But like, when you winnowed down, like, guys with a 40-inch vertical who were at least 6'4 and 240 pounds and ran a 40 in under 4.5 or something like that, you very quickly got a list that was just Chase Claypool and Calvin Johnson. Not that he ever profiled as Calvin Johnson, right? But like, that's the class of athlete that we were talking about. And what an insanely disappointing performance in week 4. Yeah. That pick that Kenny Pickett threw, not to say that it was like a beautiful ball or anything like that, but it hit both of Claypool's hands. Like, what are you here for if not to catch that pass in exactly that situation? So he's just been a rough watch. He was a brutal watch last year. Full of promise after week one. Like, I was really into his usage after week one, but man, I can't wait to, I think I still have him on one roster, and he might be that guy that I just drop before I even make an ad just to be rid of it. That's probably going to happen. The other guys that I would throw in here, Julio Jones, a really strong brand name, but he's, you know, you mentioned it. You got the notification immediately after the game that Julio Jones has another thing. He's going to have a thing all year, and he's not. I mean, in the best case scenario, he's like the number 3 or 4 receiving option for that team. So got to move on from him. And it certainly appears that the Greg Dortch era might be behind us in Arizona. Not heavily involved after the return of Rondale Moore. Not that Rondale Moore was super heavily involved in week 4 either. Kind of a classic receiving line for Rondale Moore, the 3 catches for 11 yards. I mean, that's how he's used. That's how he's going to be used. But I think whatever your plans were for Greg Dortch, I only bring him up here because we fielded like 5 questions Greg Dortch in Fantasy Football Live. Didn't see that coming. Didn't think that Greg Dortch would be like the recurring theme of the show, but he was, and I think you can now drop him.
Yeah, 100%. You know, he really fell down the routes run. You know, but it was Rondale Moore that went back out there in the same amount of routes as Marquise Brown. So yeah, the Greg Dortch era is over. Richie James also. We got a bunch of Richie James questions. Like, come on, yeah, man, have some self-respect. Okay, our hold on loosely candidates, Andy. I'll go first here with Alexander Mattison. I don't know if people are going to be tempted to drop him, but you know, if Dalvin Cook is healthy, whatever you picked, like, keep hanging on to Alexander Mattison, because if he ever got dropped, he'd be right back up at the top of this list. So keep him around. I'm also keeping these two receivers as well. Noah Brown, just because Michael Gallup's back, I think Noah Brown is still going to have a role for this team, honestly. Like, he's played well. He continues to be a crucial part. So if you need receiver depth, I'd hang on to him. And Romeo Doubs, man, don't hate dropping because of that, you know, catch, no catch, touchdown thing. It's the rule's the rule, man. I think, like, I only bring him up, I know he scored a touchdown, he has fantasy points. He probably is not a guy that people are going to think about dropping, but the fact that he had a great touchdown catch earlier in that game, and two, remained involved and a crucial part of the offense during the game or the game winning field goal drive, like, that says more to me than the drop. But I know, like, the cute Twitter talking point is like, oh, Aaron Rodgers will never throw to him again. Well, it's like, that's already wrong. You threw to him twice on the game winning drive after that. So give me a break. Those are my guys I think you should keep hanging on to.
Yeah, Doubs is really good. I don't know that receiving core has a guy that is just a clear number one or going to develop into a clear, you know, absolute alpha. But Doubs has been very good. It was also pretty telling that they were working the heck out of Randall Cobb in that game. So that was a little weird.
Tony Romo was very juiced about Randall Cobb.
Oh, yeah, he was. Yeah. He totally was. Oh, this is vintage Randall. This is young, spry Randall Cobb. Anyway, they're all going to get work. Yeah, they all have their role, and Alan Lazard is probably going to lead that receiving core in touchdowns. My guys in the Hold On Loosely segment, I only mentioned this first guy because I did field a question on him, and I imagine it's a shallow league. I imagine it's an 8-team league, a 10-team league. Maybe it's your mom's league. I don't know. But somebody was asking about dropping Antonio Gibson. I think it's a little premature to drop Antonio Gibson. Like, maybe this is lingering bitterness because you were mildly disappointed in him last year when he played through a broken leg and still touched the ball 300 times and had a decent year when it was all said and done. I think he's a good player. The Brian Robinson story is going to be fun, and Robinson is definitely somebody who needs to be stashed right now. But let's just wait and see how this plays out, because if Antonio Gibson still settles in as somebody who's getting a dozen touches, 15 touches, that's still plenty playable. And then the other guy that I'm going to hold, I got no excuses for most tight ends this year. There's Hockenson had a day, and Mark Andrews is obviously great, and Kelsey is great. And I don't know that I can recommend any other tight ends officially, but I would hold on to Dawson Knox. Cause again, he's a guy tied to Buffalo's offense, but we're probably going to have no McKenzie this week. We're certainly going to have no Crowder. It's going to be down to Diggs, Shakir, and Dawson Knox at some point has to score a touchdown. McKenzie, I was thinking about this earlier. Isaiah McKenzie is having almost exactly the statistical season that I thought Dawson Knox would have, right? Like, he's, even when he's not getting a lot of targets, he's catching touchdowns. Like, he's basically having the Knox year from 2021. Sooner or later, Dawson Knox is going to find the end zone for you again.
I hope you're right, because I drafted a lot of Dawson Knox. So I'm holding on loosely, Andy. And I draft a lot of Dawson Knox and Mo'Ally Cox as the number two deep stash guy on bigger bench leagues. And those 25 points on the bench, well, Dawson Knox continues to have Dawson Knox lines. Yep. That hurt me, Andy. So I'm holding on loosely as well. All right, now it's time for the segment that me, you, all the Treviso babes, bro, and five other people love. It's time to guess who was dropped in my mom's league, Andy. And I'll say this, man, the Treviso babes league, my mom, if you've missed it, is playing fantasy football for the first time this year. And they're into it, man. They're in Naples, Florida. They've had a rough go of it, the Treviso babes, the last week or so with Hurricane Ian, but they're all hanging out in one person's house. And my mom said they're having a football watching party. She's texting me, pictures of them saying tell Andy how young and spry we are. We don't play cards. We play golf and tennis and pickleball. She's trying to get them on the damn podcast. Denise, mom's sending me videos of Denise literally talking trash to me because she dropped Michael Pittman and he had 4.6 weeks. Hey, I didn't hear Denise chirping at me when he caught 8 passes the week before, mom, but that's another topic for another day. Andy, can you guess who are the two people? We got two big ones this week, and I'll give you a hint for each one. The first one is a young running back who had a monster game yesterday. When I say running back, he's either in his first or second season. By the way, mom picked up this player because she badly needed a running back, and it helped her probably go to 4-0.
Oh, boy. Is it so I'm going to say that this is, if they had a huge game, this is either Damian Pierce or this is J.K. Dobbins.
It is Damian Pierce. I don't know why Damian Pierce was dropped, but my mom, like I said, she knows that
Damian Pierce was coming off a good game.
I know. Dude, I know. And again, I'm not helping her. I'm not cheating. But I said, just make sure you check in the waiver wire who's getting dropped in this league. Damian Pierce, man, she needed a running back. Actually did need a running back because her RB2 was Rashad Penny. Ended up playing Pierce over Penny. Didn't really make a big difference, but so Damian Pierce, welcome to Beverly's reasonable team or whatever the none of them have changed their team name, by the way.
They all have the auto-populated team. I mean,
they
they're
all
busy.
They're very, very busy.
Those pickleball tournaments never stop. They're far too busy to change the team names.
100%. All right, a second player who was dropped. This is a consensus top six drafted tight end. It's not George Kittle, who I've mentioned before, has been dropped 3 times in this league and is currently currently on my mom's roster.
It is either Kyle Pitts, which I can almost defend, or it is Dallas Goedert.
Neither. It's actually Darren Waller. He was dropped.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and was someone else added Darren Waller. So he is no longer on the waiver wire. He was picked up yesterday.
So it wasn't a drop Darren Waller, add Mac Hollins move?
I mean, dude, it might have been. I didn't look at the I didn't look at the transaction. It sure might have been, man. So that was pretty funny. Those are two guys. I mean, the Damian Pierce one was like, wow, okay. I mean, you know, mom's like, someone dropped this Pierce guy. I'm like, you go, yeah, good call. Good. She's like, I added this Pierce guy.
I kind of sort of get it when they're injured or when they're coming off like random dud games. Like I definitely
see that. Mike
Evans
suspended, you know.
Yeah, you'll see that in hometown leagues. But usually a guy who just, I mean, what did Pierce run for against Chicago? It was like 80 yards and a touchdown.
Right?
He was good. He fumbled a little, but I doubt they punished him for his fumbles by dropping it. Like this is a clearly good player who is going to be one of the right answers in fantasy.
Well, these ladies are old school. You know, you put the ball on the turf, you get your ass sent to the waiver wire. Unacceptable mistakes. Yeah, you can't.
You get the Lawrence Maroney treatment. Yep.
100%. You know, on who's ever awesome or reasonable team out there. I don't even know who dropped them. So, yeah. All right. Damian Pierce, man. All right, that is going to do it for us. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Behrens. You can follow me on Twitter at MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, follow the at Yahoo Fantasy account for all of the best tweets possible in the fantasy game. If you like the show, make sure to leave us a 5-star review on whichever podcast platform you're listening on. It would really, really help us out. Chargers running back Austin Eckler coming off a big game. Thank God. We'll be back tomorrow for another great episode of Eckler's Edge. Until then, we're out.